Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're looking at a whole stack of sources and are really challenging something pretty fundamental. It's this idea, this expectation, that you have to feel motivated before you can actually make a change. We've all been there, right? You set a goal. Maybe it's exercise, maybe meditating, maybe, you know, finally learning that thing you wanted to learn, or even just getting to bed on time. You start out strong, but then inevitably, you hit that wall, and what do we always say? Oh, I just lost my motivation. And so the goals just stall. We sit around waiting for inspiration to strike again.
And that right there, according to this deep dive into behavioral researcher Jerry Gelbart's work, that's the trap. It's actually kind of a radical idea when you first hear it. The core thesis is motivation is optional. Seriously. Waiting for that burst of energy, that feeling of inspiration, that might be the very thing holding you back, keeping you stuck. If we can shift to acting from, say, clarity and commitment instead of just how we feel moment to moment, well, then we stop waiting for permission from our moods.
Okay, hang on. Let's unpack that because it feels really counterintuitive. Like, we're taught motivation is the fuel, right? No fuel, car doesn't go. Are you saying we should just get out and push the car?
Huh. Well, it's maybe more like realizing the car's electric and you've been sitting there waiting for a gas station that frankly doesn't apply here. Gelbart has this great example. It's almost painfully relatable about swimming laps. He knows it's good for him. He knows he feels better afterwards every single time.
Yeah.
But when that alarm goes off, time to go. He admits he never feels like it. Not once.
Oh, I definitely have my own version of the swearing moment. For me, folding laundry. I know I'll feel better when it's done. Lighter, clearer space. But those, like, 30 seconds right before I actually start, pure internal argument. Total misery. Just trying to talk myself out of it.
Exactly. And that leads us right to the core insight here for this first part. When you pause and ask yourself, okay, self, do I feel like doing this hard thing right now? Your brain, which is basically wired for comfort, for efficiency, for, you know, the easy path, it's almost always going to scream, no, of course not. Stay put. It's warm here. It's easy. And then the excuses just flood in, right? Oh, it's too cold out. I'm tired. I can do it tomorrow. I'll feel better then.
Right. So if the brain's default setting, its sort of baseline vote, is always against effort, then relying on motivation, which is just a positive feeling. It's like we're setting ourselves up to fail from the start. We're trying to negotiate with part of us that fundamentally wants to stay the same.
Precisely. The second you try to check in with your desire level, you've kind of already lost the battle. Gelbart's big insight here is just, well, powerful. If the answer inside is pretty much always no, and you've already decided intellectually that this action matters, that it's important, then why even ask the question? You're basically just giving veto power to the part of your brain that wants immediate comfort, and it shouldn't really have that vote.
Okay, that makes sense, sort of philosophically, but is that sustainable? Like, if I just force myself day after day without any motivation, isn't that just going to lead to burnout? How is this different from just old school willpower, you know, gritting your teeth, which we know kind of fails eventually for most people?
That's a really crucial distinction. It's not about brute force or white knuckling it. It's about changing the question you ask yourself entirely. Willpower is like fighting with the feeling. Commitment is about bypassing the feeling. We need to stop asking, do I feel like it? Or even, will this be fun right now? Instead, we need to ask two questions that connect us to something bigger, our long-term self.
Okay, what are those questions?
First, is this actually in my best interest? And second, maybe even more powerfully, is doing this aligned with the kind of person I want to be? There's this quote, it really sums it up. If we continue to do what we feel like doing and not do what we don't feel like doing, nothing will change. Simple, but yeah, it's about acting on commitment, not just impulse.
Okay, so if we're bypassing the feeling, we need some way to get really, really clear on what is in our best interest, something to cut through that internal noise. And that brings us to one of the really practical tools Gelbart talks about, adapted from behavioral therapy, the pros and cons exercise.
Yeah, this one's fantastic because it forces you kind of gently to look at your own ambivalence directly on paper. It makes those hidden costs of not doing the thing really visible. So for you listening, you literally take a piece of paper, draw a big cross on it, make four boxes. And you think about that specific behavior you're wrestling with. Let's stick with, say, meditating daily.
Right. So you're kind of forcing yourself to do the math, taking the emotion out of it for a minute. What are the four boxes we need to fill in?
Okay. Start with the ones we usually think about. Top left box, pros of doing it. This is where you list all those good long-term rewards. You know, building self-respect, feeling calmer, better focus, reducing stress, that kind of thing. Then, top right box, cons of doing it. This is what that comfort-seeking part of your brain yells about. It takes time. It might be uncomfortable at first, maybe boring. You have to shift your schedule.
Okay. Yeah, those seem pretty straightforward. But I guess the real, the deeper stuff comes when you look at the avoidance part, the not doing it. I bet people tend to skip those bottom two boxes sometimes.
That is absolutely the key. You have to fill out the bottom half. So bottom left, pros of not doing it. What do you get by skipping it? This is the immediate payoff. That temporary comfort, avoiding the effort. Maybe you get, 15 extra minutes scrolling social media. That's the reward your brain is chasing in that moment.
Oof. Yeah, writing that one down feels a bit exposing, but important. Admitting the pro of skipping meditation is just more screen time makes a choice seem kind of petty, doesn't it?
Exactly. It puts it in perspective.
Yeah.
And then finally, the bottom right quadrant, cons of not doing it. This is the long-term price you pay for inaction. That ongoing guilt, maybe, the stress that never really goes away because you're not addressing it, feeling like you failed yourself, maybe even health issues down the line if it's exercise or diet related.
Wow. Okay, so once you have that all laid out, four boxes filled, it feels like motivation just gets taken out of the equation as the gatekeeper. You don't need to feel like meditating. You just look at the paper and see objectively that the long-term costs of skipping it are way worse than the short-term discomfort of doing it.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And think about it. We already use this logic for things we have to do, things that are totally unmotivating. Nobody feels excited about paying bills or calling their insurance company, right? We don't check in with our feelings about those things. We just do them because we've calculated, maybe unconsciously, that the consequences of not doing the cons of not doing it are just too high. We need to bring that same sense of decided action, that mandatory framework, to our personal growth goals.
Okay, it's easy to say just ignore the no feeling, but that internal resistance, man, it can feel really strong. Powerful, even. We probably need to understand a bit about where that no comes from, right? Like, why is it so loud even when we're staring at a list that clearly says, do the thing?
Yeah, absolutely. It comes from way back. It's fundamentally a survival mechanism, from our evolutionary history. But it's often really outdated for the challenges of modern life. Our brains are basically designed to keep us safe and, crucially, to conserve energy. So the default mental setting is almost always going to zoom in on the cons of doing the hard thing and the pros of avoiding it. It's always looking for the path of least resistance. That's its job in a way.
So it's like there's this internal tug of war happening between one part of the brain that wants immediate comfort, the easy way out, and another part that's trying to think about the future, about bigger goals.
That's a great way to put it. That's the neuro context that's super helpful to understand. You can almost think of it like the toddler brain versus the CEO brain. The limbic system. That's kind of the toddler brain. It's impulsive. It's driven by seeking short-term pleasure, avoiding immediate discomfort. It lives entirely in the now.
Right. It wants the cookie and the nap now.
Exactly. And then you have the prefrontal cortex. That's your CEO brain. It's the more thoughtful, strategic part. It helps us plan. It helps us inhibit those impulses, make decisions based on our long-term goals, our values.
Okay. So if we wait for motivation, which is just an emotion, right, a temporary feeling, we're essentially letting the toddler brain drive the bus.
You got it. The toddler brain yells, I don't feel like it. And so the bus stays parked. The only way the CEO brain consistently wins is by setting up a decision-making process that's separate from how you feel right now. Acting based on that clarity, that commitment managed by the prefrontal cortex, that's where true freedom actually lies. Freedom from the whims of your moods.
And this is where the sources mention mindfulness, but maybe not in the way people always think about it. It's not just about being calm on a cushion. It's more like a tool for watching this internal drama unfold.
Yes, exactly. Mindfulness, in this context, is really about clarity, not necessarily calm. It's the ability to simply notice when that resistance pops up. That internal voice that starts whispering or shouting, skip it, you're too tired, do it later. The strategy isn't to get into a big argument with that voice. Or try to crush it with sheer willpower.
Because arguing with the toddler brain is just exhausting. And honestly, the toddler usually wins those arguments through sheer persistence.
It often does. So the strategy here is different. It's to notice the resistance, acknowledge it's there. Okay, there's that voice again, and maybe even name it. You can literally say to yourself, okay, that's the voice of avoidance, just trying to keep me comfortable. Thanks for sharing. And then you gently, deliberately, bring your attention back to your original intention. You act based on the CEO's decision, not the toddler's complaint.
So you act with the feeling present. You don't wait for it to vanish. Okay. But that still sounds like it requires effort every single time. Is there a way to move beyond that daily battle? Like, motivation might start things off, and commitment keeps it going for a while, but that commitment still uses fuel, right? How do we get to cruise control?
That's the next crucial step. We move from relying solely on commitment to building identity. Motivation might kickstart things, sure. Habit makes it consistent, takes less effort. But the most robust, long-lasting change happens when the behavior becomes part of who you believe you are.
Ah, that reframe feels huge. It stops being about just ticking a box on a to-do list and starts being a reflection of your character, your values.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
So instead of saying, ugh, I'm trying to meditate every day, the internal script shifts. It aligns with a deeper value. I am someone who values presence and mental clarity.
Mm.
Or instead of, I'm trying to make myself go to the gym, it becomes, I'm an athlete. Or maybe I am someone who prioritizes my long-term health over short-term comfort.
Mm. You start acting in ways that are consistent with the identity you're choosing, regardless of how your limbic system feels at 6 a.m.
That definitely changes the game. It moves the decision from something you debate every day to something that's just assumed. Part of who you are makes the choice much quicker. If I am a person who values health, then exercising isn't really up for debate. It's just what I do.
Right. And this is where Gelbart offers some really practical, concrete tools to help lock in that new belief, to anchor that identity, and move away from moment-to-moment emotional decisions. They act as external supports for that internal shift.
Okay, the first one sounds simple, but I can see how it would work. Setting a weekly commitment. Yes. Just pick one specific, relatively small thing you absolutely will do this week. Maybe it's riding for 30 minutes just once. Maybe it's that one swim. Decide you will do it whether you feel like it or not. By choosing just one thing and following through, you start teaching your brain. When the CEO makes a decision, we execute. Feelings don't get the final say.
Okay, one down. The second tool tackles that moment of resistance head on. Having a prepared script ready for when the excuses pop up.
Absolutely essential. Because that voice of avoidance will show up. It always does. So when it starts whispering its excuses, you need a simple, pre-rehearsed phrase ready to deploy. Something like, noted, but this matters. I'm doing it even though I don't feel like it right now. Having that script ready stops you from getting sucked into debating yourself, rationalizing. You just cut the internal argument short.
Okay. And the third tool leverages the power of making it official, externalizing it.
Yeah.
The self-contract.
Yeah, this taps into the psychology of rules we set for ourselves. It's surprisingly powerful. You actually write down, physically write or type out, and maybe even sign a personal statement, a commitment to this change. It's like making a formal pact with your future self. That simple act of writing it down, signing it, even if nobody else sees it, it kind of formalizes the decision. It takes it out of the realm of fleeting thoughts. You're creating evidence that says, look, the decision was already made by the rational me. We're just executing the plan now.
That really does shift it. It's like the difference between just having a goal in your head versus signing a treaty. A goal can drift away. Signed treaty, well, you have to consciously break it. So you use the pros and cons to get clear. Then the contract locks in the commitment, the belief.
And the simple phrase, the mantra that ties it all together, the one to keep repeating internally is just, I don't have to feel like it. I've decided this matters. When you act from that place, consistently, the really good news is that often the feeling of motivation does show up. But it shows up after you start, maybe a few minutes in, as a result of taking the action, not before.
Wow. This has been a really fundamental shift in perspective on how change actually works. So to kind of wrap it up, motivation's great. It's nice when it visits, but it's not reliable. It's more like a passenger than the engine.
Exactly. What is dependable? Your ability to get clear on what truly matters to you, your values. Using objective tools, like that pros and cons list, to really see what's in your best interest long term. And then acting from commitment. Commitment to that decision, commitment to the identity you're building. You act first, and then you let the motivation, the good feelings, catch up later as a kind of reward for honoring that commitment.
And it brings us back to that swimming pool image, doesn't it? That feeling after. I never regret going swimming. I only regret not going. That feeling of pride, of capability, that's what the commitment actually delivers consistently. So as we finish up, we want to leave you, the listener, with a final thought, something to chew on maybe, related to that idea of your future self. Think about just one action right now, something you've been putting off. Maybe it's a difficult conversation, maybe a task, maybe starting a new habit, something you know deep down, objectively, is really in your best interest. And just imagine for a second, what would a letter from future you say about this specific moment? That future version of you, they know the discomfort you feel right now. They hear that voice of avoidance loud and clear. But what message would they send back? probably something like, trust me on this. Take the step. Just start. Honor the commitment you made, not the feeling you have right now. You're going to feel so much stronger, more capable, more like the person you want to be literally 5 minutes after you begin. Don't wait for your feelings to give you permission. Just take one small step forward. Now,